What's going on, everyone? My name is Sebastian, and you're listening to SEP Talks. It's 2020, and I feel like right now it's very hard to believe that you can actually build something from scratch on platforms such as Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube with a large amount of followers and a high amount of engagement. Well, in today's episode, I'm going to invite my friend Dane Walker. He's someone that has grown his Instagram from zero followers to 100,000 followers in less than 8 months. I am so, so pumped for you guys to listen about Dane Walker's story. And well, without further ado, let's get right into it.
Have you here? I follow you on social media. I've taken your course online. You have a lot of great insights on social media and marketing, and I've heard your story before, but I think for all the people that are listening right now, I would love for you to give us like an overview of who you were, you know, even just 8 months ago, but maybe like start a couple years ago, where you were before and the journey that has taken you to having Victory Front now.
Yeah, cool, man. So I mean, to add as much context as I can without boring you with too many details, to go way back, as a kid, when I was growing up, we moved like every 3 months, and this there's a reason that this is important, because this kind of plays a lot into my character, into kind of where I am and why I'm doing things the way I am and my personality traits and all the rest of it. But like, as a child, unfortunately, my mother was like an alcoholic. My father wasn't present, and we're just moving all the time, you know? And I think as a kid, if you're moving all the time, it's kind of like you just, for whatever reason, you just always make new friends. You never really kind of have that certainty. You never really get grounded. And as I was growing up as a child and then into like early teenage years, I was always looking for like, I guess, creative outlets, because that was like my escapism as a child, was like art and drawing and like trying to just ignore like the BS that was going on and with my parents and stuff like that. But yeah, so like as a kid, I was always autistic. So like my content creation, people ask like, how can they do that? And I think you have to have some type of creativity in your bones to really tap into. I think everyone's creative. I think if you work hard enough, anyone could be creative. But as a kid, I was always like drawing. I was always painting. I was always like doing weird things, like, you know, taking cards of like Spider-Man and sketching him and making him full size, even at the age of 3. And it would freak out my mom's friends. And you know, I love my mom, but like, yeah, growing up, it was just hard, man. So like, coming into teenage years was tough, because like, I didn't really have a good background and I was poor and we're moving all the time. So like, I got picked on a lot, man, at school. I was always the odd one out. I was always the new kid, or that, you know what I mean? And I was skinny and I was like kind of nerdy. So like, it just didn't help, you know? I just got made fun of a lot. So I think from a young age, I just developed tough skin. I just kind of stopped caring about what people thought about me, because I kind of had to. And I was quite tall, so I didn't really get beat up a lot. And I was kind of a big kid. You know, I'm like 6'3". So like, as I kind of went through my teenage years, I got quite big and I got a bunch of fights. But like, I think just in my DNA, I just never really cared about people's opinions. And that just has served me so well as an adult. So like, I know this sounds rough, like how I grew up, but I'm so grateful that I could go in a lot more into detail. A lot more horrible things happened, but like, just to summarize it, I think sometimes it's important that we develop a tough skin, especially in business, especially in social media, especially in sales. So it's a talent that I had that I didn't really understand until recently, until maybe a couple years ago. And then as a teenager, I moved out of home pretty quickly. So I had to pay the bills. So at the age of 12, I was working full time. I had a full time job. And then I went back to school and I had a part time job while I was at school. So I was always in the business world. I was always selling things. I was always, I guess, when you're working at a young age, you're around adults a lot. So you're not really doing childish things. You're not really, you know what I mean? So like, yeah. I mean, I would do childish things. I go home and play like World of Warcraft and video games and stuff. But like, because I had to be responsible for my household from a young age. Like 13, I had to help pay the bills. Like all this stuff sounds horrible, but like, I'm so grateful all these things happened, because it just taught me responsibility. It taught me, you know, the value of hard work. It taught me about the economy at a really young age. And I was always entrepreneurial, man. Like at high school, I used to, this is kind of off topic, but I used to fill my bag with like soft drinks or sodas, as you Americans call it, yeah. from like the local shopping center. And then I would sell them at lunch to make profit to buy my own lunch. Cause like the lunch my mom made me sucked. So I was like, I'm just going to be entrepreneurial and, you know, I'm going to buy my own food every day. So I would like sell soft drink at lunch and the kids knew that I sold it cause you couldn't get it at the canteen. And if you did want to buy one from the vending machine, it was like three times the price of what I was selling it. So like, I was always like, okay, the vending machine is $3.50 for a soda. If I sell a soda for $1.50, but it cost me 50 cents to make it, then I make a dollar profit. So I'm doubling, like I'm making 200% profit on each sale and I get 20 in my backpack. Then I can buy my lunch and I can put the rest in the bank. So like as a young kid, I was always just trying to think of these little, not a scheme, but like think of ways that I can just kind of get the things I want, you know, in a weird way. So I was always doing stuff like that. Coming out of school, you know, then girls get introduced to your life and all of a sudden focus isn't really there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just had different jobs and I was always creative. I worked in a t-shirt shop and actually bought this from the shop I used to work at. Now I order my prints from my old job. But yeah, in that job, it taught me a lot about Photoshop. That's where I really started to get skilled up in design. And people used to walk in and they used to say, hey, you know, I run a motorcycle store. Can you design a logo and print some shirts for us? And I'd have 2 hours to do it. You know, so like I got really good at like coming up with ideas and creating under the pump. I worked there for 5 years and I left there when I was 19. And when I left there, I wasn't sure. I was kind of lost. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I would go in and out of jobs and different things and I'd move around a lot. And then when I was like 20, I started reading a lot of books about like businesses. And one of my friends gave me a book called Cashflow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki, which just talks about the economy. And it's like four ways to make money. You know, there's the poor side, which is employment or self-employment. And then there's the rich side, which is building a business that works for you or investing money that creates revenue for you. And at that moment, I was like, I want to be on that side. Like, you know, I've seen my parents, I've seen a lot of poor people. I don't want to be poor anymore. So from that age, I was obsessed with like reading these books and trying to like really upskill myself with the economy. And dude, like I flunked high school so hard. Like, I did not care about it. I got straight A's in wood class and engineering and I failed everything else. Yeah. Literally, like if you saw my report card, it's like fail, 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 A plus, fail, fail, A plus. Yeah. And my teachers hated me because they were like, you got so much potential. And I'm like, I'm just not interested in math and science and all that other stuff. So I would only ever apply myself if I like something. And that's just because of my upbringing, right? Mm-hmm. But to bring this round circle, it's just to give you some background context of like where I kind of came from. Right. Then when I started jumping through different jobs, I would get a new job and I would jump to the top of their sales list because I would sell a lot more than anyone else because I understood a lot more about sales, psychology, business and economics than anyone else. So I would get sales jobs as a young kid and everyone else around me is in their 30s and 40s and I would outsell all of them. And they hated me because I was constantly in these sales environments where they hated me because I would outperform them and I outwork them. And I was a workaholic. I would work 12-hour days. They'd work 10-hour days or 8-hour days. So I was constantly just pissing people off wherever I went. And I just didn't care. And then, you know, fast forward to more recent times, I did MLM. So I did network marketing and I loved it, man. MLM is an incredible platform if you want to do it. Most people fail at it though, just being real. You know, and they'll tell you that at their meetings, but it's truly difficult. It's truly a challenge. And you have to like relentlessly pursue it day after day for years to really get anywhere. And I did it full time for 2 years. I got it to the point where I could live off it for 2 years. And I built a team of over 1,200 people. And the best part about this is it taught me how to speak in front of stages of people, like of thousands of people. It taught me how to dress in suits and, you know, build that reputation and that confidence in myself. And then it just taught me about culture, team development, coaching, training, and teaching other people the skills that I adopted. So in MLM, it's like you train yourself, you get really good, and then you figure out how you can train the people in your team to do the same things that you're doing. So I just got really good at coaching and training in really short, effective timeframes, where people will be like, oh, it's going to take you a long time to learn that. I'm like, no, it's not. Just follow these principles. And I would literally hijack the meetings. Like I would, I started like the people that were running the meetings of like 200-300 people would show up. They were like, Dane needs to just run these meetings. We sell way more when Dane runs the meetings. So I'd build the slide presentations. I would set up the room. I would facilitate the whole event. I'd play the music. I'd do the whole thing. I'd even DJ. Like, I was like, the music has to be right. Like, you know what I mean? So like, I don't know. Like, it's in my DNA just to be like this, just to be obsessive and just to control everything and try to be creative in the mix of it. After a long time, it just wasn't what I wanted to do. So I left. I still make money from it. It's still like, you know, cause my team's still growing. Like it still provides revenue. It's just not my interest. I'm looking at selling my position. It's basically, it gave me a lot. So like all that just gave me context. And then I was working, at managing a gym, you know, a whole stack of people at the gym, just thought I was just some idiot, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And in 2 weeks, they made me a manager. And then, you know, that got me some hate. You know, when you show up and you outperform everyone, you outwork everyone, then you get promoted. You know, people just don't like that.
Especially at a young age too.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so funny because my sales team hated me when I showed up. And then 6 weeks later, I got another promotion to go run a gym. And when I left, they cried. Like my sales team, not the people at the gym, but my sales team were like, fuck man, like we don't want you to leave. Like this is you being the best person ever. Like, you know, cause I would coach them. I would help them. I'd give them books. I would just be their friends. I would encourage them and support them. And I just didn't get that from anyone prior or afterwards. I get text messages. Oh, they just hired this idiot. Like this is what he's trying to do with us. Wish you were here. Like, you know, and so they moved me to another gym and I was managing another gym in another town. And we figured out like, this is where things kind of started for me. And this is going to make sense now. I'm going to tie it all together, but basically I moved to this new town. They needed somebody to sell memberships because that gym in that town was struggling. They were selling like 30 memberships a month. Every other gym in the nation was selling like 100-120 memberships a month. But this one gym was like losing the business a lot of money. So I had half the sales team that I had previously with no skill. So the first thing I did was literally fire the sales team because they did not want to be there. They didn't want to listen to me. And I gave them 2 weeks and I was like, get out of here. I'm going to fire you guys. And then I hired two new kids, who I got ridiculed for because they were slightly unfit. And I was like, I don't care. Like these guys will sell memberships. Like they're relatable. Everyone in this town's fat. Like it's fine. And then those kids and myself, we sold more memberships than all the other gyms in the worst town, in the worst location with the worst performing. Like this town was like the meth capital of Australia. Like it's not a good place. And everyone's overweight. So I don't know if it played in my favor or not, right. But we killed it, man. We were selling a lot of memberships and it was all because of social media. So we were dominating social media marketing. We were making videos that were going viral nationally. We had other gyms ringing me saying, how do we do what you're doing? Cause you're killing it. If you were in our gym, we would sell 500 memberships a month. Like tell us. And then I started realizing like, I'm really talented at this stuff. I really understand this whole world of marketing, distribution, like campaigns, branding, all that type of stuff. And then I just, you know, I just decided, hey, I don't want to live in this town anymore. I tried to get a transfer. They didn't really want me to. And I was like, I'm moving. Like, I don't want to be here anymore. Like this town just, I was just over it. It's just where we lived. My girlfriend was depressed. So we moved back. They gave me a transfer, but they kind of were like trying to like push me out of the company. It was kind of weird. It was kind of like, I wasn't welcome. They didn't want me there. It was kind of like I burned them and pissed them off or something. Anyway, so I got another job selling mobile phones and I was depressed. Cause I was like, you know, one minute I'm like running the show. The next minute I'm just selling phones, getting told what to do. And I had this moment where I'm sitting in front of this old customer. He comes in to complain and he's yelling at me and I'm trying to get him to calm down. And you know, those moments in those movies or those cartoons where like, you just kind of see someone in a scene where someone's yelling at him and they just fade out.
Yeah.
It was like, he's like, rah, rah, yelling at me. And then he just kind of, it just kind of faded out. And I had this moment where I was like, I don't want to be here. Yeah. And I was like talking to myself in my head. I was like, okay, I'm in this position. I failed everything up until this point. I keep trying to work in other people's vehicles. Working for other people doesn't seem to get me what I want. And I was like, I know what I need to do now. Like, I need to go build my own thing. And I knew what I was skilled at. And at that time, my girlfriend had been telling me all about her job. And she was working as a sales rep at a company that was selling marketing, like websites, advertisement campaigns, all the stuff that I sell now with my agency. And she would tell me about how they were performing and how little sales they're making and all this stuff. And I was like, I could do this. And she's like, yeah, like you could do way better than what they're doing. And I'm like, you tell me this person runs this company. She's hired these people. This is her responsibility. And I looked at her marketing. It was trash. And I was like, she's making money. And she's like, yeah, I'm like, I could do this. So very rapidly, I built myself a domain. I built myself a website. I started handing out information to my friends. Hey, I do graphic design now. I do ads. I do this stuff. And I started creating content on my social media page because I saw Chris Doe do it. And I was like, I could do that. So I started creating these informational graphics. And as you know, like from my backgrounds, all that past of reading those books and going to this program, I had a lot of knowledge and expertise that I could train in my content. So I was basically just collecting things that I'd learned, putting them in my content, illustrating them and posting them every day because I was enjoying it. People started interacting with me and having conversations with me. And before you knew it, in a 2-week time frame, and this is going only eight months ago, in 2 weeks, I had so many leads coming in and so many sales for people going, can you make content like this for me? And I just kept saying yes. And I just kept doubling my price every time until it got to the point where people were like, it's kind of expensive. And I was like, yep. I had so much cash flow coming in that it just didn't make sense anymore to have a job. And it was scary because I was like, it's only been 2 weeks. Like this whole thing could fall apart like anytime. And I just had to go for it, man. And it was funny because like leading into that, when I was creating this content, everyone at work knew about it. And they were like whispering behind my back, like, who does he think he is? He thinks he's some guru. They're trash talking me and laughing and giggling about me in the back room. And, you know, again, like I interrupted one time. I walked out the back room. I heard him like whispering and talking about me. And then they like, oh, he's here in the back room. Like, and they pretended like they weren't talking about me. So I had plenty of these moments where no one around me supported me, like nobody, except for my girlfriend. And even she was like, oh, maybe we should wait a little while. Like, cause we're in debt. And she's so sweet. But she was just like trying to, you know, we're in a fearful situation. We're in debt. We can't pay bills. She's like, taking a risk doesn't really feel great. I'll let you jump in here, but that's pretty much leading me up to this point. And then 8 months later, you know, now I've got this agency, we got a crew and we're doing some big things.
You're about to hit 100,000. You're probably going to hit 100,000 by the time that we launch this episode. So congrats, dude. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Thanks,
dude.
Man. Yeah.
That's crazy, man. So there's a lot of shit that I want to ask you because I mean, obviously from, you know, you growing up and kind of going through a rough stage in your life where you don't really fit in anywhere, you ended up finding that creative outlet that kind of spoke to you, right? Like as far as like being more creative, artistic, all that stuff. So I guess like the first thing is like, how do people that don't have that artistic bone in their bodies, how do they figure out what type of business they can do, what type of value they can provide to people or anything along those lines if they don't really have that like unique talent?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, for the listeners, I think I'll try and keep this as simple as I can because I understand brevity helps. You know, you don't want to hear me ramble for another 20 minutes. but yeah, so like, I think when it comes to making money, a side hustle, I don't like that term so much, but like, I get it. It's like a little side thing. It's all about like making the side hustle your main hustle. And I get it right now. Like the world is crazy right now. So people are more fearful than ever. And the good out of this crazy situation, and I don't like to use the word good, it's just, you got to look for the silver lining out of all this craziness is that, and I will answer your question, but the silver lining is that people have finally realized, oh, this whole job thing, it's not so safe. If there's a wave two, it's definitely not safe to have a job. And you know, even people that are like running companies right now, like they're freaking out. So the whole world is kind of like upside down because it's like, oh, if I start a business right now, is it stupid? Because I'm going to have to invest money and I don't, you know, in a month, am I going to be able to pay rent? And then the other people that have jobs are like, am I going to lose my job? And then there's all the people that have lost their jobs. So right now, like there's a lot of fear. Like there's a lot of fear in society. There's a lot of like people just feel like very ungrounded, very uncertain and very lost. And I totally get it. If I was starting my business now, I don't think it, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it would have turned out the same way because I started this just before the whole COVID thing and I had the momentum before the COVID thing. And I'm like, if I had to put myself in the headspace of like, if I was starting this now, would it be the same? I'm not sure. So to answer your question, when it comes to like, if people don't have a creative bone in their body, I think most people do. I just think it is expressed in a different way. I think every human being is creative. You know, it's a part of our brain. It's something that you can tap into. It's something that is unconscious, but you can draw from it. And you might be, you know, someone might be skilled at, you know, building something, but they can't paint something, you know, or they might be skilled at, you know, drawing something, but they can't really go out and put together a shed or something like that. So like people are just creative in different expressive ways. I think that if you have a talent and if you have something that you thoroughly enjoy that you can create and, you know, whether that's a service, whether that's, you know, you offering a service of someone or creating a product for someone, I think now is the time to build it because the world's in a place where we're going to go from a retail, you know, face-to-face society. And unfortunately, we're going to be dramatically moving into a more e-commerce. Everything is online. Everything gets delivered to your house. Everything is, you know, and here's the thing, like lawyers are making a lot of money right now because they're consulting online. Like lawyers used to do face-to-face. Real estate agents are selling online now. Everyone's selling stuff online. Whereas, you know, go back a year, that would have been ludicrous to do that. Now it's acceptable. It's socially acceptable to sell from your PJs in your house, anything. So I think if you have something to offer, it's just a matter of just getting it started. And even if it fails, even if it goes nowhere, even if you fall flat on your face, the lessons that you're going to learn from doing it are going to be truly tremendously valuable. And when I talk to my students, I got hundreds of students in my academy where I teach, and you're one of those students, how to grow your Instagram page. I get a lot of questions from those people of like, you know, like, should I do this thing or not? And I'm like, well, do you want to do it? And they're like, yep. And I'm like, go for it. Even if you fail. And they're like, oh, but what if I fail? I'm like, great. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, if you fail, awesome. Because like, the best things that have ever happened to me in my whole life are failures. You know, when I was homeless, that was awesome because it taught me a lot. When, you know, I started previous businesses and they went nowhere, awesome because like there's so much power in failing and then just moving through it and not caring. And I think so many people just need to get started. Whatever your thing is, like if you like to make miniature Warhammer figurines, you like to paint them and you want to sell them online. I know a guy that's making $300,000 a year selling Warhammer paint. Like he's painting figurines for people. I know someone else that's making money just, you know, she teaches yoga from a lounge room and she's making like $260,000 a year or something. She's just teaching how to do yoga from a lounge room on Zoom. So like right now, if you know how to do yoga or you know how to paint figurines or you know how to create a service or you know how to do accounting or you know how to create graphics or you know how to do copywriting, you know how to write articles. If there's anything that you can do right now as a skill set or as a profession and you can do it on an online platform, you need to be building yourself a domain and you need to be creating content that displays and shows off your work. And you need to start talking to people because you don't need 10, 20, 30,000, 100,000 followers like myself. I was making money on my page when I had 2,000 followers. And it was a full-time wage. You know what I mean? So like, you don't need these tens of thousands of people to make money on Instagram. You just need to get online and plug into the community that needs your product or service.
I think that's super interesting, man, because I think we definitely live in a time where we look at the Gary V's and we look at all these like big celebrities and we think, I need to get to that point in order to be successful, right? Like I need to get to that point where I have thousands of followers and I have, you know, all these different things online for me to be able to make a living off of social media and anything online. But That's really not the case. And kind of like what you're saying, you know, 2,000 followers and you are already able to replace your full-time job, right?
Yep.
So I want you to talk about, you know, because I guess you started your own company at the age of 28, 29, right? Why do you think it took you 28 years or 29 years for you to start that company? Why didn't you do it before?
Yeah, I wish I did. I think there's a lot of lessons I needed to learn. You know, I kind of always knew I was going to build a business, but I would always play that story in my head that I was like, you know, I'm not ready for that. I'm not ready for that responsibility. And it's also like, you know, that whole imposter syndrome thing of like, oh, like, you know, you want to do it and you know, you could do it, but it's like, I don't know if I deserve that. I don't know if it's really going to work out. So it was always like a fairy tale in my head that I wanted to do for a long time. Ever since I started reading books, like when I was 19, I was like, I'm going to start a business one day. I'm going to invest. I'm going to build, you know, it was like, I knew I was going to do it. And I just got caught into the trap of like, you know, oh, you know, I'm just going to work a job and just pay off some of my debt. I'm going to get out of debt first. And then it became like, I'm going to get out of debt before I start a business. That doesn't make sense to start a business when you're in debt. And then it was like, oh, this job's not too bad. I'm just going to focus. And you get sucked into the jobs, right? You get sucked into like, you know, if you work really hard and apply yourself, you can make commissions and you can go from 40K a year to 60K a year. And then you're like, wow, that's really great. And that means I can use that 20K to pay off my debt. And then I could get out of debt and build a business in 2 years. And it was just always a story in my head, putting a roadblock between me and growing a business. And, you know, fortunately, I got to the point where this dude was yelling at me in the store and I was like, I'm done with this. Like, it was literally that moment where it was like something snapped in my head. And I'm like, I'm sick of getting yelled at every day for things I didn't do. None of my managers back me up when this stuff's happening. They just kind of sit there and stare. I'm like, I don't want to be in a position as a human being where I'm getting yelled at and I have to just take it. Like I'm some type of bitch. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, this is crazy. We're human beings. Like, you had a problem? Come talk to me. Don't yell at me to my face for something Sarah did over the phone and she lives in India. Like I'm a human being. I'm right here. I'm trying to help. Like, you know what I mean? So like, it was those moments where I was in so much pain and frustration. I was like, you know what? I'm doing it. Like, I'm doing it now. It doesn't make sense. I'm broke. I can't pay for petrol, but I'm going to take money out of, you know, like basically to get my business started. Me and my girlfriend had to like, we had to eat rice and noodles and like frozen vegetables, to be able to pay for the resources I need to get my business started. And that was painful, man, watching my girlfriend across the table, like eating rice and vegetables. And I'm like, man, I put her in this situation, right? She's trusting me to like provide and you know, she's eating this shit food. I better make this work. You know what I mean? So like, it's just, it kind of just, when I thrust myself into the situation, I was between a rock and a hard place. I was like, I have to make this work. I can't make her eat bad food to sacrifice, you know, her well-being. To help me just play with a business. I was like, I have to make this work. The crazy thing was, dude, I was working like 10 to 12 hour days and built this on top of that in 2 weeks. I would work relentlessly until I passed out. I would sleep for 3 or 4 hours and then I would get up, go to the gym and go to work. You know, a lot of people don't have the grit to do that. And I don't want to like sound egotistical, but it's like, yeah, most people don't. I wanted it so bad. I desperately wanted to get out of my situation. And I think that those circumstances, when you're in a lot of pain, like right now, like if you're listening to this and you're in a lot of pain, good. Like, use it. Like, that thing is a weapon. You can get a lot done when you're frustrated. You can get a lot done when you're pissed off. Like, you can all of a sudden, like, entertainment and Netflix and like video games and distractions is just, you don't have time for that anymore. You're like, I got to get to work. I got to make this thing happen. Yeah, so hopefully that answers your question. But I think people just need to get moving, man. And if you need to anchor yourself to some pain, and if you need to prepare yourself for some failure, good. Use it.
And you know what I think a lot of people actually go through that. Like, I can't imagine someone that works fast food or retail doesn't go through what you were going through, as far as like holy shit, like what am I doing here? Where this person's yelling at me, this person's treating me like shit, yet I just choose to come back every single day, right? So I don't know, man. I feel like whenever, because I hear that a lot, it's like, you know, you got to the point where it was like, I can't do this anymore. I'd rather go out and try something crazy. And if I fail, I'm okay with that because I'd rather fail than stay here one more second. So what do you think is the difference? Because why is it that you're able to make that choice, but so many people out there feel that, have that same feeling at some point, and they just are not willing to take the chance on themselves?
Yeah, I think it changes depending on the person. In my situation, I am very rebellious. If you tell me I can't do something, I immediately want to do it. I've always been like that. Like if someone tells me there's no way you could do that, I'm like, watch me. Like I remember being at the gym and someone's like, there's no way you could lift that weight. And I'm like, give me 2 weeks, you know, and I was lifting it. It's a part of me, and it's a lot of people don't have this, but you have to find your thing. I tap into a really dark place to get things done. Some famous people that did something similar was like Michael Jordan went to a very dark place to become the GOAT. And there's other people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Joe Rogan goes to a really dark place when he's doing, you know, jujitsu. Like I think just as a male, that was my go-to. It was like, I'm going to unleash my frustration, my anger, and put it into my work. And it sounds, dude, when I talk about this, it scares people. Like, what do you mean you did this because you're angry? I'm like, I hated my job, man. So I would work like 16, 18 hours days because I hated my job that much. Like I use that hate to like if I was like, man, I want to go to bed. I'm like, I hate my job. Let's keep going. You know, I got another hour in me. You know, so I think for me, that's what it was. It was that rebellious. I don't want to be told what to do anymore. I was fed up. I was frustrated. That was what I needed. There's that famous story of like, it's a parable, and there's two old men and they're sitting on a front deck and they're on their rocking chairs and they're both really old and they're like rocking back and forth. And there's a dog on the veranda or the deck just laying down and the dog's whinging. It's like, and then one of the old men says, you know, hey dude, what's up with your dog? He keeps whinging. The other man says, yeah, he's laying on a nail. And then the other old man goes, why doesn't he get up? And then the second old man goes, it doesn't hurt enough yet. So sometimes people are in pain, but not enough pain to make action. There's a threshold that people have. And when it gets to a certain point, they snap. You know, so like whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but like you see this happening right now, people are snapping in the US. Well, at least that's where it started. It's happening everywhere now. This whole Black Lives Matter thing. This was like built from COVID. I don't think if COVID didn't happen, I don't think this would have happened.
Yeah.
Because what happened is you have a large percentage of the population stuck at home under house arrest. They're pissed off already because they can't go out. They can't go watch a football game. They can't watch basketball on TV. They can't go out and eat. They can't go to a comedy club. They can't go to a bar. They can't unleash. They get their job taken away from them. They don't know when this thing's going away. They're pissed. And then this George Floyd thing happens and it's like tended to a fire. Boom. You know, this whole thing blows out and people are in pain. So now they're taking action. That's at a population extreme. Like that was built from people are frustrated. They snapped. And then you get this, you know, situation where people are protesting and no, nothing wrong with protesting and speaking your rights. But the horrible part is like the people rioting and like locking down cities and like all that crazy stuff that's going on. I don't want to go too much into it, but basically it's like, well, that happened out of fear and frustration. So like if you're in a job and you know, you're frustrated, you don't like it and you're whinging about it and you don't do anything about it, then that's not a good place to be. Like spiritually, physically, like as a human being, like it's not good to be in that situation. Fortunately enough for me, I just had enough. So I encourage anyone listening to this who's in that situation, like reach out to me, send me a DM. I'll try and help. Basically, try to find pain. Try to make that job that you don't like so painful that you're forced to leave. That's what I did. I just played psychological games of like, you know, where am I going to be if this keeps going for 5 years? Do I want to be here in 5 years? So I would amplify the feelings by asking myself, do I want to be in the same situation in 5 years? Because 5 years ago, I was in the same situation. 5 years has gone by, I'm in the same situation. I don't want this to happen in the next 5 years. So that's how I played it in my head. And that kind of scared me enough to be like, you know, I got to do this thing now. I got to make it happen.
Yeah, no, love it, man. Love it. So I think I want to shift into social media now because, again, you know, you hit 100,000 followers in just 8 months. You are seen as, honestly, like a sort of like a micro guru in the, when it comes to like carousels and marketing and social media tips. So like, tell me, how did you start your page? Like, I guess like if you had to start from zero today, how would you build a page like yours?
Yeah. So, I mean, I learned some lessons along the way. The best part is if you can find a way to display what you do, but not in a way that sounds like you're trying to sell something to someone, because here's what a lot of people do, right? So like Seth Godin talks about this, how, you know, people, when, let's just go back a few years, when factories came out, people used factories to get their ideas out and to the masses, like Henry Ford, XYZ, he would use billboards and newspapers and radio to promote. And the more money you would spend, the more sales you would get. TV comes out, same thing. You know, you just think like if you sell wonderful white bread and you have a jingle and you put that on TV and you play it enough, people are going to buy your bread. You know, so it was just about market share. Like if you could buy enough of the market's attention, you would make the money. Because people would see your packaging and buy yours because they've seen it a bunch of times, as opposed to the one that they've never seen before on a TV ad. Then you move from that world into the social media world. What, like 10 years ago? It was only a decade ago that this happened, that jump happens where people could start marketing online properly. And people try to treat social media the same way they treated TV and radio. They just try to promote, advertise. And they're like, why am I not making money? Why are people not following my page? And it's like, well, people don't want to follow ads. Like imagine if back when TV existed, if they had a subscription, would you subscribe to the ads or would you subscribe to the TV show? Right?
Right.
Well, you wouldn't subscribe to the ads. So why the hell would someone follow your page if you're posting ads all the time? Right? So like most people, when they try to start their business, their whole page is an ad and there's no value. And when I say no value, it's like, well, it's not interesting to read ads. Come buy my stuff. Come buy my stuff. Come buy my stuff. Come buy my stuff. Like who cares? So what I teach people is like when you're trying to get attention on social media, when I was building my page, I sold content creation. So I was like, I'm just going to create really rad content that's interesting and encourage people to talk to me in the comment section and the DMs. And the same principle applies to every other niche and industry. So in my case, I create design work, but I make it fun for anyone in business or anyone that wants to learn or anyone that's a designer can read my content and be like, oh, there's value here. And I didn't try to sell them anything. It's just like, I'm tremendously giving value and I'm trying to give it at scale and I'm trying to do it every day. And I'm just trying to have conversations with people and I thoroughly enjoy it. I get DMs all the time. Hey, I've been posting carousels for 2 weeks. My page isn't growing. Should I quit? And I'm like, yes, because you don't enjoy it. If you're asking me this question, you should quit. I never asked myself that question. Should I quit? I was like, I'm just going to keep going. This is fun. I like talking to these people. You know, so like if you ask yourself those questions, you're probably doing something you don't like doing. And if that's the case, you should hire someone else to do it. Yeah. So like now I work with people and like personal trainers, I go to their page and it was them doing giveaways and buy my package and videos of them trying to sell stuff. And I just go, just give it for free on your page. And it's so hard for people to accept that. Oh, I just got to give away all my stuff for free. Yeah. Because the more you do that, the more you separate yourself from the majority. The majority don't do that. That's why Gary Vee's entire business model is give away everything for free. And then people will turn around and demand you to sell them something. Same in my case, people were inboxing me, Dane, what can I buy from you? And I didn't have my course yet. I didn't have my coaching yet. I didn't have, you know, all my services that I have now. People were like, what can I buy from you, man? I love your content. So I was like, all right, I'll make a course. And, you know, we're working on some other things. We're working on a book. We're working on a workbook. We're working on webinars. We're building some other stuff. Because people keep saying, hey, I got your course. What else? What else you got? And I'm like, Jesus, like people want to spend money, right? So like if anyone's starting up and you're trying to figure out how can I start this thing in your industry, teach something, like educate something. So like if you're a personal trainer, I was telling these personal trainers, give away free training videos and make them really interesting and really fun to look at. And then just do them all the time. And even if you're getting no results, just keep going because, you know, after 100 days, you're going to have some type of audience showing up and just keep going. And, you know, now I've had PTs get like in the last 3 months, like 10,000 new followers just by doing that. They're like, man, I could never have done this if I wasn't giving away this stuff for free. Now they get it. The same with like musicians. They're like, how do I grow my page? I'm like, put free music on your page. Like, get up every day, play the guitar and write a song. And it doesn't have to be great. Just do it and make content. And 8 musicians said that's stupid, you know, in a row. And then one musician was like, okay, great. And now she's, you know, writing songs on her guitar every day and she's getting like 100 comments. So like now her page is growing and now she's getting gigs and now she's getting invited to weddings and stuff like that. Now she's monetizing it. So it's just like, whatever it is, if you're a musician, if you're a personal trainer, if you're selling, you know, there's a girl I know, she gets a photo of your dog, paints it and then sends it to you. And it's like this beautiful painting of your dog or your cat or your bird or whatever you have. And you know what I mean? So then people are like buying these as presents for each other. And then what she's doing, she's just making videos on how she does it so that anyone that's interested in art can go, this is great. I want to do this. You know, she's giving away all her tips and secrets for free. People are following her. And then because of that, they're buying her stuff. So I think you just need to find a way to give value for free, whether it's in the form of education, whether you're giving away information or whether you're entertaining people with comedy or music or something that's going to stimulate their brain. You can't be posting ads on your page. You need to be doing something for free and you need to give it away daily and you need to do it consistently and not care about the immediate results and just communicate with the few who are engaging and build relationships with them. Because if you can look after 5 people, you can look after 500. But if you don't cherish and appreciate the small crowd that you have, it's never going to grow. Just cherish what you have and try to grow up by a little bit every day and it'll work out.
Nice. Love that, dude. It's awesome. Dude, so talk about this, because even for myself and my business, I feel like there is always that shift of you start something and like, kind of like you mentioned, the imposter syndrome comes in and you feel like you kind of sit down and you say, wait, like, why am I doing this? Why am I qualified to tell people how to market, how to brand themselves, how to do social media? So how do you go about imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I struggle with it a lot. Here's the thing is, get a book called Relentless, by a guy called Tim Grover. And the reason I talk about this is he puts people in the 3 categories. And every time I talk about this, people don't like it, but you're going to have to read the book. This won't make sense probably, but I'll try and summarize it best I can. Basically, Tim Grover is the guy who coached Michael Jordan, one of the highest performing people on the planet of all time. And you know, whether you like Michael Jordan or you think he's an asshole, the guy is a beast when it comes to getting the mission done. So Tim Grover talks about how there's 3 categories that he likes to put people in when it comes to work and performance. I'm probably butchering this, but basically the first category is he calls it coolers. A cooler is like the people that hang out by the cooler at the office and they gossip and they bitch and they backstab and they're like whisper behind people's backs, you know, like those type of personalities. And he talks about how they're the type of people that they try to get through their job by doing as least they possibly can. And we've all met these people, right? I've worked with plenty of people that try to do the bare minimum just so they don't get fired. And that's just their personality. They just don't like what they do and they just want to get by and get their paycheck and get out of there. They're not invested. The second type of person he talks about is a closer. It's someone that's like, you give them a task and you give them directions and instructions and they'll get it done and they'll be efficient, but they need direction. They still need you to kind of lay out the blueprint for them before they feel confident to go do the thing. And the reason I find this valuable is because a lot of people fit in this category. They fit in the category of like, you know, I want to be successful. I want to build a business. I need someone to tell me how to do it before I even start. And that's a problem in my opinion, because you're giving your power away in that situation. If you're in a situation, and this is, I'll talk about the imposter syndrome and how it applies with this, but basically it's like, if you're saying to yourself, oh, I don't have the resources. I don't have the time. I don't have the capabilities. I don't have the support. I don't have the network. If any of that stuff, you're giving away your power. You're saying, I'm a victim. I'm not in control of my life. An external force is, I'm going to give that control. That's essentially what imposter syndrome is. Oh, I'm not worthy of this thing. I'm going to fail at this thing. I don't know how to start. I don't have the whole picture laid out for me. I don't have support, a support metric. You know, it's a fear-based situation. It's a situation of being a victim, essentially. And Grant Cardone talks about this a lot as well. I won't go into that, but basically it's like, you know, the cooler is the person that the bitches and moans and does the bare minimum. The closer is the person that's like, they do a killer job. They just want direction before they do anything. And then the last category, which is the cleaner. I'm mixing this up. It's confusing. The cleaner is like, he's like, this is Michael Jordan. The cleaner is like, they don't need a blueprint. Give him the ball. He'll write a blueprint. He'll put himself in front of failure again and again and again and again and again, because he wants to figure it out and make it himself. And the principle of this is, and the same thing applies to business. He was basically saying Michael Jordan was the best cleaner he'd ever met, because Michael Jordan would have plenty of people tell him things he could not do and things that weren't possible and things that he wasn't capable of and plenty of roadblocks, but never in his life did he quit. He was just relentlessly like, I'm going to figure this thing out. I'm in control of my life. I'm going to make this happen no matter what. Get out of my way. Like, his personality, you know, is the same personality that someone that is tremendously successful in business. And I hear this conversation a lot about failure. Like, oh, what if this happens? Run towards it. Like, if you're scared of something, run at it. Like, that's what Michael Jordan would do. He would just run at it and be like, I'm going to figure this out myself. I'm going to make it work. I'm going to do 18-hour days. I'm going to do what I have to do to get to the position I want to get to, because I'm extremely motivated. Now, imposter syndrome will creep in. And I talked about this because when I went from being flat broke and having nothing and being in debt to 2 weeks later walking out on my job to then making an absurd amount of money from clients, and a lot of it, and then hiring people that are working tremendously hard, and I'm profiting off their work as well as my own. It starts to play with your head, because you're like, I don't deserve this. Like, 8 months ago, I was selling mobile phones and getting yelled at. Now I'm like making a crap load of money from my pajamas in my lounge room. Like, I don't deserve this. You know what I mean? It's just that, it's that bad self-talk. So I had to read that book again, and I just had to remind myself, I'm like, no, I'm in control. I'm not giving my power away. I decided to be here. I decided to make this happen. I decided to help these clients. They decided I'm valuable. I'm just going to keep going. So you just have to like make sure that you're like speaking to yourself in an empowering way, because a lot of people don't. A lot of people speak to themselves in a really bad way. So if you imagine there's a cassette tape just playing a loop in the back of your head, if it's saying things like, I'm not good enough, how is this happening? I don't deserve this. This is going to fall apart soon. You watch, I'm going to fail at this. Like, if these are the things you're playing in the back of your head, then it's going to come into fruition. So you need to catch that unconscious thinking, and you need to change it to something that's empowering. I can do this. I'm going to figure it out. Get out of my way. Nothing can stop me. And it sounds like you're being egotistical and cocky, but it's just reinforcing your brain, and you're trying to train your brain to be able to cope with the new pressure of that job. So usually imposter syndrome happens when new stress is invited, and you're trying to figure out, how do I navigate this new stress? I can't remember who coined this, but there was a guy who's basically talking about, in an ecosystem, if you introduce a new threat, like let's just say you introduce a lion and there's deer, you know, the deer has two options. It can evolve to adapt to live around lions, or it could die or leave. So like, it's the same situation. You can either... And when a stress like a lion's invited to a situation like your habitat, that's a stressful situation for a deer, right? So, you know, you can still live in that ecosystem where the food is plentiful and all the rest of it. But basically, it's like when stress is invited to your life, you can run away and ignore it, or you can rise and adapt to the new stress. So going from employment to running my own business invited a lot of stress. So I had to adapt. I had to evolve. And that's where the imposter syndrome comes in. And I had to be like, no, this is just stress. I have to learn. I have to adapt. And this is the terrible thing that happens a lot, is people get to a state of overwhelm and they feel like they're stupid and incapable. You've probably experienced this, where there's so much overwhelm happening. They're like, man, I must be stupid. I'm feeling so overwhelmed. This is so stressful. I'm freaking out. what the state of overwhelm literally is, what's literally going on in your head, is chemicals are being released because your pathways in your neurons are literally trying to rebuild themselves. Overwhelm is when your brain is like, okay, we're doing all this new stuff and there's all these new threats that are in your environment and you're trying to build this business. The imposter syndrome comes in because you're like, I'm not good enough. This is going to fail. This is stressful. I can't do this. I can't cope with this. That overwhelming state is literally your head just rewiring itself. So you need to just persist and push through it, because before you know it, that what was stressful 3 months ago is now your normal. So what was stressful to me when I was building my business 6 months ago, now that's a normal morning for me. Like, you know, so like waking up to 80 emails and 300 DMs and clients asking questions and back and forth, you know, like months ago, that was stressful and chaos for me. I was like, this is insane. I don't know if I can cope with this. Now it's like, oh yeah, clients need stuff. Okay. I got 80 emails. I'm just going to delegate that to my teammates. I'm just going to focus on building a to-do list today and let's just get it done. So like, yeah, it's just my brain's used to it now.
Okay. And I think definitely if you think about the outcomes that could happen, if, for example, you quit your job, you start your own business, and if you listen to those people in the back of your mind that are saying, it's not going to work, you're going to fail. I mean, essentially, if you listen to them, it will most certainly happen. Which is kind of weird how, if you think about it that way, it's like, why would you ever quit because of other people? Because with what they're saying, it most certainly will happen to you. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, in that situation, like human beings, we're herd creatures. So if you go back to, you know, the beginning of time, our brains, they dug up a human being from, I think it was 70,000 years ago, and biologically they hadn't changed much. Like, we haven't changed much in 70,000 years, which begs the question of like, man, like what were we doing 70,000 years ago if we were just as smart as we are now? And the point I'm trying to get to is like it's only in the last, like, what, 1,000 years we've had all this technology happen and industry, and it's only like 30 years we've had the internet, or not even that, like 25 years or something, I don't know. The point I'm getting at is like, our brains are used to being in tribal settings. So we're used to being, okay, I'm the guy that goes out and hunts, and you're the guy that makes the tents, and you're the guy that makes bricks. You know what I mean? And socially, if people started like disliking you in that circumstance, that meant death. It meant you were going to get banished or killed or shunned, or you weren't going to get enough food, or your family was threatened. So like, in our brain, it's like, you know, in those situations, like we're herd creatures. We're meant to live in cohesive environments where we interact and, you know, we're organisms that essentially work together in teams and do things together. We have to support one another to survive. And that's what we've been doing for thousands of years. Like, go back in history, humans weren't by themselves. They were in tribes because they had to depend on each other to survive. So then you thrust that same brain into today's age, and the people that you're around all day are coming against you, and they're disliking what you do. All of a sudden, that same part of your brain that was like, I'm going to get banished and killed, is activated, and it's just as strong as it was in that situation. And people, like, you see people grovel for social acceptance. They grovel to get people around them to support them and care about them. And as soon as they get, it's a herd mentality thing. If you become different to the herd that you're in, and you have different belief systems, and you're challenging them, and you're doing things differently, and you're making them feel inadequate, and you're making them feel inferior, whatever it is, whatever their thing is, all of a sudden the herd turns against you. So like, every job I've been in, I've usually challenged people quite a lot, and the herd turns against me. And then when I started reading about this and I started observing it, I was like, this thing is real, man. Like, people, it's so funny that people will fight to the death to get accepted. But if you make the conscious decision to be like, well, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter if my colleagues don't like me. It doesn't matter if people make fun of me behind my back. It doesn't matter, because those people most likely do not have your best interest in mind. I always ask this question: what is this person's intention? When they're saying shit behind my back, what's their intention? Well, it's probably they're in pain and they're trying to lash out and they don't have anything better to do. Their intention is not good. So why would I listen to that person? Right? So we tend to listen to the noisiest people, but what you need to ask yourself all the time is like, what's this person's intention? You know, this person's saying this horrible stuff. What's their intention? They're trying to hurt me. I'm not listening to them. That's a toxic, disruptive, negative person. So I would look for people in my environment that had good intentions, that truly wanted to support me, even if it didn't make sense to them. They're like, I got your back, man. Like, I got some amazing friends that have supported me through the craziest times. And a lot of times it doesn't, like, what I'm doing doesn't make sense to them, but they still support me. So you just gotta surround yourself with people that feel like sunshine, and anyone that doesn't feel like sunshine, just ignore them, because they're not going to serve your mission. They're only going to slow you down and they're only going to get in the way. So like, just don't get emotionally involved with people that have bad intentions for you.
Yeah. Dude, that's great. That's great, man. I think one thing that I definitely want you to cover today is, you know, now that we've kind of gone through social media, how you would go about all that stuff. I want you to talk about personal branding and talk about what is personal branding to you. How do you go about?
I'm really sorry.
Microphone out.
Okay, so how do you go? Like, you know, what is personal branding? How do you go about personal branding in a digital age where everyone has a personal brand on their social media?
Yeah, good question. So personal branding is powerful because what's happening right now is people want to learn skill sets. I'll talk about one component of personal branding, because personal branding, we can talk about that for like 12 hours, but I'll take apart like the social media component of it. So personal branding right now is big, because what's happening is people, I mean, how many people want to go to university? You know, people, it's much more, yeah, right. It's, and even before this whole thing happened, university, college wasn't that exciting. It's like, hey, go do this degree, spend $100,000 and study your ass off for 5 years. You know, it's not really attractive. And then at the end of it, you might get a job. It's not really attractive. What's more attractive is, hey, is there someone on social media that's doing what I want to do? Yeah. You know, there probably is. Yeah. And then guess what? You're probably following their content and engaging with it. So like, personal branding is powerful because there's people on the planet that want to do what you're doing. There's a lot of people on the planet that want to do what I'm doing, running an agency from home, helping people, you know, training, doing courses, stuff like that. So like, my content, a lot of people follow me just because they want to do it for themselves. So personal branding serves a lot in that regard, because personal branding is, it's just being a human version of a brand. Like right now, people aren't really excited about following a logo. So if you're trying to build a business and you're trying to get an online presence and an online following, and you're trying to get people to have conversations with you, rather than doing a logo and starting a company, you know, start a company, but become the face of the company, be a personal brand, because you're more approachable. People feel more inclined to want to have a conversation with you. They feel more inclined to want to comment because they feel like they're supporting a person, not a business. People don't really want to feel like they're supporting an enterprise. They want to feel like they're supporting an individual. That's why people love Gary V, and they're not like, the emotional connection people have with Gary V is huge. The emotional connection they have with his company, VaynerMedia, it's very small. People have a huge emotional connection to Grant Cardone. Cardone Industries, not so much. You know, so it's the individual. It's the same with like Apple. People love Steve Jobs more than they love Apple. People love Jeff Bezos more than they love Amazon. You know, people love, I can't remember his, the guy from Alibaba. They love that guy, you know? So like, people love a personal brand. People love someone who's accomplishing things, who's doing what they want to do, who's living out their lifestyle in their own way. So social media right now is blowing up when it comes to personalities and personal branding. And if you have something that you're really good at, like painting Warhammer figurines, like that example, right? It's a bit weird. But that guy's becoming a huge personal brand. The girl who's writing guitar songs every day, she's becoming a personal brand. So like, it's so much faster to grow a social media presence if that's your intention. If you're trying to create that human approach, if you're communicating and making yourself vulnerable and you're having communication with the audience, it's really fun for people to involve themselves in your content when that's what they're getting to interact with. I'm starting to inject a lot more of myself into my content, and I'm getting way more results. Like if I post a photo of myself in my content, people get way more excited than if I post an interesting piece of art. So now I'm really starting to hone in on that. And hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And yeah. Now I was going to ask, because on your social media profile, for example, you do, I think 100% of your content are carousels, right?
Yeah.
What do you think about like video content when it comes to that?
Yeah. So it's my microphone. Okay. I unplugged it before. Yep. I don't know if it's, yeah. So video content, it's a funny place because people, for whatever reason, it's just, there's so much video now that people are kind of just drowned out the noise unless they're following someone that they really like. The potential for video right now, a big space for video is educational content. So I'm about to launch myself on Spotify, releasing like a video platform. I think that's going to be another huge step for social media. I think we're at a point right now where social media is going to get shaken up a little bit. TikTok is on the up and coming. YouTube's struggling. They're not struggling, but they're struggling to have the same dominance that they did. So a lot of people that were doing content on YouTube are now looking for other platforms to do it on. Instagram behind the scenes is trying to monetize the platform for influencers. So the problem that Instagram has right now is shitty content. Excuse my language. There is too much bad content on Instagram. So they've realized that if we put monetization incentives in the platform on IGTV, which is a video platform, which is what Instagram's doing, is basically they're going to run ads on your IGTV videos and you get paid from that. So now it's like, well, if I get a lot of IGTV views, I got to make some really good content because that's going to pay me money. So Instagram is competing in the market space by trying to put monetization incentives to get their content to be of a higher quality. And video content is more relevant than ever because right now, especially right now, people want to learn things from home. So I teach how to grow social media. I teach how to grow businesses. I teach how to make sales and how to monetize an online store and how to monetize an online business and get a high conversion. That's what I teach. You might teach something else entirely. And it's just a matter of finding a way that you can connect to that audience, offer those services, and then have those people have conversations with you to try to buy that stuff.
Cool. Okay. How are you on time, by the way?
I got heaps of time, man.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome, dude. So no, I mean, we've talked about social media. We've talked about personal branding. I want you to talk about, you mentioned that you read about one book a week, right?
Yeah, I try to. Yeah.
So tell me this, like what is like the number one book that you would recommend to someone out there who is starting their business and you think like this book is a must read for you?
How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Cool.
Yeah.
Why do you think so?
Because if you can understand how to interact with people, you'll win in business. Business is just a giant tribe of people. And if you suck at talking to people, then you're not going to get anywhere. Most people fail because their communication is not effective. That book will teach you how to effectively communicate with business-minded people. When I read that book, it just taught me to listen a lot more than I do speak, except in this scenario. and to follow that up, some other really good books, depending on where you're at. So if you need help with learning how to really network and communicate, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Old school book, really cool. One of my favorites, this is just a personal favorite, is The Richest Man in Babylon. It's like that book is like 8,000 years old or something. Like it was reiterated from like Sanskrit, from like scrolls and stuff from ancient, you know, pastimes of the ancient world. But that book talks a lot about like the principles of money, like money as an entity, why it exists. Another one is, yeah, if you just need some oomph, like I would suggest The 10X Rule by Grant Cardone. That book like woke me up out of a slumber. Like that book put a fire under my ass. Like ever since I read that book, I just can't forget that book. Like if there's a book that I can't forget, it's that one. it just, that book teaches you how to not be a victim, how to take control of your life and how to get on with it. Yeah. So some other books, of value is Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink, which talks about you're responsible for everything that happens to you. You're in control of your life. You decide what you should be doing. Really good book. And if you're trying to get a bit of an understanding of the marketing world and the, and some of the stuff I was talking about with social media and tribes and psychology and stuff like that, any book by Seth Godin, he's got like 8 or 9 books, and any book by Marty Neumeier, both those two individuals write phenomenal books, and any of every single one of them is great if you look them up.
Currently reading Purple Cow. Have you read that one?
Yeah, that's a good book, man. I've read half of it. I loved it. I don't know why I didn't finish it. I need to go back and finish it. I jump around. So like this annoys people, but sometimes I'll read like a chapter of this, 3 chapters of this book and a chapter of that book. I'll read like 3 or 4 books at the same time. I like to read a tactical book, a biography, and then something that's really challenging at the same time. It's kind of fun. It's like, when you read multiple books at the same time, you get weird ideas because you start like mixing them together. It's fun.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, like, what does your daily life look like? Because obviously, you know, you're full time with your business. You are with a team of 10 individuals.
Yeah.
If I'm mistaken.
Yeah.
What does your daily life look like?
Yeah. Usually, I wake up, have some breakfast, spend some time with my girlfriend, have coffee and just chit chat, hang out for a bit. And then usually by, I usually work pretty late into the night. It's going to change soon. I've got a new regime that I'm about to start. Currently it's not great. Currently it's been like, wake up at 8, start work at 10. And then I usually work from 10 AM, pretty much right through until sometimes like 2 in the morning. And I'll be in and out of sales calls, in and out of meetings with the team. We're building a lot of systems and operations and processes for our company, because once it's up and completely finished, it's almost done. Basically everyone just knows the playbook. So we're building a playbook for how we deal with clients in different situations and different products and stuff like that. But yeah, so I mean, wake up, breakfast, start work, and it's kind of jumbled. So I always have a schedule before the day starts of like what needs to get done that day. And I always do the most difficult things in the morning. I get the most challenging thing out of the way immediately. I try to get as much done before like 1 or 2 in the afternoon as I possibly can. And then I'll go eat. And then it's like the day just gets easier as it goes. Some people leave like the most difficult things for the end of the day. And that's stressful if you have this difficult thing just kind of hanging over you. But yeah, I read a book called Eat That Frog, and it talks about like do the most challenging thing at the start of the day and just do the hardest things first. It's such a good process, and yeah, it takes away a lot of stress.
Okay. So as far as like working out, you know, doing stuff outside of business, how do you manage all that?
Yeah. So I'm currently not working out. This whole COVID thing has made it challenging, because I tried to get gym equipment, but it's sold out. Where I am, I can't even buy a dumbbell. I can do push-ups and pull-ups, but I can't buy dumbbells. I used to train like 2 hours a day, like powerlifting, heavy lifting weights. I can't go to a gym, and I've looked everywhere online and I can't order the stuff I need. I'm really excited because the gym's open here again in a month. So what it will look like is I'm going to be a 5 a.m. freak. I'll be up at 5. I'll probably have a coffee. I'll train for an hour and a half, 2 hours. I'll come home, spend some time with my girlfriend, have breakfast. And then again, probably start work at like 8 or 9, and then work through my, cause I got a kid on the way. The reason I'm working like absurd hours right now is because I'm trying to set up everything. So when the baby's here, I can go back to a normal life. I can wake up at 5 and then finish at 5, you know, cause I want to have time with, you know, my future wife and my children. And yeah, relax a little bit more, man. Because I think now things are up and running. The hardest part is just getting your business off the ground. And then it's a matter of maintaining it and organizing it. But I imagine that there's going to be days where I still work late, but I think if you got a child on the planet, you need to make some time for it. So yeah, I'm just working as much as I can while I can. But I'm excited to go back to the gym and eat healthy again. something I truly miss. It's a great outlet, and it's something that I think will actually help me. Even though I'm taking 2 hours out of my day, I think I'm going to be more productive, and I'm going to have more energy, and I'm going to need to sleep less, which will be nice.
Yeah. Dude, well, first off, congrats on the wife and the kid, man. That's awesome.
Thanks. I'm excited, man. It's cool to start a family, dude.
That's awesome.
It's good time to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's having babies right now.
Dude, so I was going to ask you, like, how do you deal with delegating stuff? Because you even mentioned that, you know, back when you were doing network marketing, for example, you like to take control. And I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, it's very hard to let go of things where, like, for example, like, you're running into situations where you know you could do a better job and you could do it quicker, but your teammate needs the training from you in order to get your vision, right? So How do you deal with delegating stuff to your team?
Yeah, good question. So you can't expect your team to do things on the level you do it. And you can't expect your team to do things with as much intention, effort, and tenacity as you do. Because if you think about it, you own your business. They don't. You hired them. So they're not as invested as you are. There's not as much incentive on the table as there is for them. So you just have to be okay with them not being on your level. And I don't mean this to offend my team. It's just like, I'm going to put an absurd amount of effort into what I'm doing. And they still might work their asses off, but it just might not be of my caliber. And you have to be okay with that. So like, I just had to psychologically let go and just be like, well, long-term, you know, I can't be doing everything. I can't be wearing all these hats. I can't be running marketing, logistics, software, content creation, strategy sessions, calls with clients, paying the bills, paying stuff. I can't run all this stuff. So piece by piece, we're creating systems. Because here's a great quote. Millionaires talk about money. Billionaires talk about systems. Systems will build a much better business than you trying to single-handedly train everyone. So what we're doing is for each department that we're building is we record all our meetings and we put them in a video file so that when we hire someone, they can go into the Google Drive and there's like all our training resources are in there. We're creating documents for everything. Like step one, talk to the client. This is the script that you use. Step two is this. Step three is this. So it's kind of building a system that they can just follow. And you can just hire anyone, give them the system, give them a month's training, and they should be able to do everything because it's there for them to follow. Same with McDonald's. McDonald's just had a system. Now it's a $1 billion company. Same with most fast food franchises. The better you can create systems that do the heavy lifting and the heavy thinking, and people just have to sit there in the pilot seat and do the driving, the better you can do that, the more effective it's going to be. So now when it comes to building a click funnel, we got a system. Now when it comes to content creation, we have a system. When it comes to running an ad campaign, there's a system. There's an A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, step-by-step process on how to do that. So that if someone leaves and you have to hire someone else, the system's still there. You know what I mean? So it's not like, oh my God, I'm going to have to train this person all over again. Yeah, you're going to have to train him, but you just go through the system with them. And you kind of force them to kind of think for themselves and figure it out and read documents and stuff like that. So, when I worked in sales and network marketing, I just created systems for people. I just created workbooks and systems and things that they could follow so they could educate themselves and teach themselves as much as possible. And then you just kind of throw them in the deep end and let them figure it out. Let them make mistakes. I'll have a really high conversion rate on my sales calls and my team won't at the same level as me, but it's okay. Cause I had so many leads coming in that I couldn't handle. So I had to just psychologically be like, hey, like they got to learn somehow. Like I'd rather them butcher a whole bunch of sales calls and in 3 months get really good at it. And then it's their responsibility now. So I had to slowly take a hat off and give it to someone. A really good book that talks about this is The E-Myth. And anyone listening to this, if you're trying to figure out how to hire people and how to delegate, that book is probably the best go-to book for this. I'll summarize the book for you. If you owned a pie shop and you made really good pies and you made the best pies in town and everyone was buying your pies and it was just you in a shop making the pies, selling the pies, wrapping the pies, delivering the pies, you're not an entrepreneur. People like to think, I'm an entrepreneur. I run my own business. No, you're a businessman. You're not an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur is something else entirely. which I'll explain. The second step is you hire someone to make the pies for you, right? And you train them. You create a system wherein they create the pie just the same the way you did. And then you hire someone else. So you have two people making pies now, just the same way that you did. And you just sit there, oversee it, and you manage it and make sure that everyone's doing the right thing. That's the second step. You're still not an entrepreneur. You're just a manager at this point. You're a business manager. The next step beyond that is you hire a business manager to run the operation. Maybe someone that used to make the pies, you promote them to manager because they could do everything just the same way you did. Maybe not as good, but pretty close. You still have the best pies in town. Now you have three or four people making the pies, one or two people managing them. And you know, you're now doing operations. You're paying bills, stuff like that. You're still not an entrepreneur. Like, you're just overseeing everything. Then when you can hire someone to do that job, and you're, whether you're a part of the picture or not, you're still making the same money. So the guy that owns McDonald's, he doesn't have to be in any of the stores. He doesn't have to do anything. He's going to make money because the system makes the money for him. That's entrepreneurship, is when you own a system that makes money, whether you're in it or not. So right now, I'm not an entrepreneur. I classify myself as a manager because, A, I'm still making the pies. I'm still making the content for a lot of my clients. I'm slowly transitioning by, I've got a couple of people that I'm about to delegate that responsibility to somewhat. The easy stuff, I'm still not going to trust them with the high-end stuff because it might frustrate some clients. But slowly but surely, over the next 12 months, my goal is to have everything delegated to a team member, and my only responsibility a year from now is to manage. And then maybe 5 years after that, I'll have someone that can manage the whole operation. And then I can just sit on a board and I can just run the show. That's when I would classify myself as an entrepreneur or as a guru. Right now I'm in the trenches. Right now I'm doing the work. So that's the best way I could explain it.
Dude, I love that. Cause right now, like, it's funny because the way that other people might see you, they might think you made it, right? Like, you are an entrepreneur, you have 100K followers, you have a business, you have 10 people in your business. But really, it's once you can step away from everything and you still are able to make money, that's when you can be an
entrepreneur. That's technically what entrepreneurship really is. It's a fun and sexy word to throw around. And sure, I'd like to class on my page says I'm an entrepreneur. So like, I'm a hypocrite by saying this, but in my mind, I hypothesize myself. I'm a businessman. I'm still working. I'm in the system and I like it. You know, Gary V, I guess he's an entrepreneur, you know, cause whether he's at VaynerMedia or not, it's pumping. Whether he's, you know, on holidays or not, his business is cranking. So like, he's technically a real entrepreneur because he doesn't have to, like, dude, he could retire tomorrow and his business will thrive. That's entrepreneurship. You know, Elon Musk is an entrepreneur. He has SpaceX. He doesn't design the rockets. SpaceX designs the rockets and operates without him. He just oversees the whole thing and just checks in, right? So like, that's entrepreneurship. So I think it's so dangerous that people call themselves an entrepreneur. I get delusional about it and they think that they made it, but they haven't. I haven't made it. I'm on my way. I'm enjoying it. But if I walked away from this right now, it would collapse. The whole thing would fall apart. So in my head, I'm like, dude, I'm not an entrepreneur. Like, I have to be a part of the mechanism for a long time before I can step away from this. The money that this is making, I'm going to be investing eventually into property. I intend to buy blocks of units. My goal is next year is to put $300,000 away and get a $3.8 million loan from the bank and buy a block of units, and then put someone in a management position to slowly renovate that over 3 years and then sell that for cash profit and then duplicate that. So like, I'm interested in real estate. That's entrepreneurship. That's one of my hobbies. That's something I wrote on my goal list a year ago, which I thought was stupid. I was like, this is impossible. I talked to people in finances. I'm like, how much money do I need in the bank? And how much money do I need to be making to borrow like 3 or 4 million? And they're like, oh, you just need to have $300,000 in this record. I'm like, I'm already doing that. So like, that's exciting for me. And I think that if you're making a lot of money, you should park it in real estate. And there's going to be a giant collapse in the real estate industry. You'll see this. Banks will start repossessing houses like crazy pretty soon. Same as they did in 2008. So if you got some money in the next year, it's a good time to buy real estate. because a lot of real estate is going to be cheap. The bank's going to be having, and this is unfortunately people's misfortune. Right. But this is how people get rich, man. They see these opportunities. They see these situations in, you know, you should make money out of a crisis. So here's the thing right now. This is the best time to start a business. If you're broke, good. If you don't have money to invest, great. Because I'm telling you right now, never have people needed as much education and as much support and as many options as they do right now. And if you can find a crack right now that is a problem that you can solve for somebody, I'm telling you right now, you can monetize that thing. You just need to work around the clock. You need to work your job if you have it, come home, and you need to build your business. And you need to remove Netflix, remove distractions. Because right now, I'm telling you right now, in 2 to 3 years, you'll see billionaires come out of this situation. There's going to be billionaires born in this crisis. And I'm not saying that you're going to become a billionaire, but I'm just saying you could monetize off the situation that we're in.
And so what would you say to people that have a brick and mortar business? Because kind of going back to what we were talking about, as far as you're not really an entrepreneur until you're not in the business, but you can look from the outside in. Because, you know, like the majority of businesses are people that, you know, it's a family owned business. They work all day, they work weekends, and they have that for 30 years, right? Like what would you say to those people as far as like, how can they get past that obstacle and into the next level?
Really good question. Innovate or die. And I'll elaborate. that's harsh, but yeah. So you need to innovate. Right now, retail is on the cusp of being on a pretty significant collapse. I'm talking to a lot of, and I can say this with confidence. I can speak about this topic with confidence because I'm helping people right now in the retail sector, like massively. And they're making money too with what we're doing. The first thing you need to do is you need to go, cool. All right, brick and mortar. It was great for the last, 100 years or so. It's pretty rocky right now. So what you need to do is you need to innovate your business, and you need to get an online presence, because a lot of these retail stores are going to collapse in this crisis. And you're seeing it happen left and right. Stores are closing. I mean, before this whole thing happened, Toys R Us closed down. You know what I mean? Blockbuster closed down. Why did Blockbuster close down? They didn't innovate. Netflix came along and just destroyed their entire business. So real quick, Netflix as a company was trying to solve a problem, which was entertainment. People want entertainment. They come home from a long day of work. They want to crack open a beer and watch something, but they have to go drive to the store, and then they have to walk around for an hour, and then they have to pick stuff out. And then they have that looming thing of like, oh, if I don't get this back on time, there's going to be late fees. So Blockbuster created a bad brand because they started preying on late fees to make their profits. They were making more money on their late fees than anything else. It was like a massive monetization, and they were exploiting people for that. They were sending absurd amounts. They're putting people into debt collection and all kinds of crazy stuff just because they wanted to watch a DVD. So what happened was Netflix came along, solved that problem. We'll send DVDs to your house, send them back when you're done. You can get some more, no late fees. This is great. So people were like going nuts about Netflix. Netflix went to Blockbuster and said, hey, would you like to buy in and invest or, you know, be a part of this? And they laughed them out of the room. They started laughing at these people like, get the hell out of here. This is a joke. You'll never destroy us. That literally happened. You know, flash forward 3 years, Blockbuster closes because they didn't innovate. They were just like, our business model works. We're going to stay exactly the same. The same thing's happening for retail right now. You need to innovate. You can't rely on word of mouth. You can't rely on the local community because people aren't going to go out shopping after this. Yeah, the stores are going to open again, but people are not going to be out spending money like they were last year. So retail has got a tough slog over the next 3 years. What they could do, and what I am doing with multiple people, is you need to create an online presence, create fun content for people to enjoy, and then create funnels and run ads to those funnels and sell your stuff online. Our ROI for people running ads with me in our business right now is they're spending $4 and they're making 30. You know, so they're spending, you know, $3,000 on an ad campaign, $4,000, $5,000 on an ad campaign. They're making $25,000, $30,000 back. So like if you could spend $5 and make 30, and every time you spend $5, you made another 30. Like, you know what I mean? So running advertisement campaigns online right now is grossly underpriced. And people like, I need SEO from a website. No, you need to run an ad campaign. You need to give something away for free, drive a funnel, and sell something on the tail end of that. You know, so yesterday we were talking to a company, a big company here in Australia that run multiple gym franchises. And I was like, give away a free like sweatshirt. It costs $7. Make the person pay for postage. So it's like, you run an ad campaign. Hey, we've got a new online store selling supplements and merch. Get yourself a free gym top. You go in there and it's like, yeah, here's a free gym top. Just pay for shipping, right? So it costs them $7. They can make a little bit back of that in their shipping. So what we've actually done, and this isn't illegal, this is all, everyone's doing this, yeah, is it's like $20 for the shipping. So it's like $12 to post it. They make $8 on, you know, the handling of the packaging of the shirts. The shirts cost $7. So they're up $1 each one. And then the Facebook ad itself is about $1 per click. So they're not even losing money and they're giving away something for free. And people, you know, are going to eat it up. And here's the cool thing is when people go in to get their free thing, they put their details in, they pay for the shipping. It's like, by the way, before you go, would you like to buy our supplement package? Or would you like to buy this package? Or would you like to buy that package? Whatever industry you're in, I'm telling you right now, this whole funnel system is like the fastest way for a retail e-com business to make money online. All the top performing e-com businesses right now that are selling services and products online are doing it through this get a free thing, pay for the shipping funnel. And then, by the way, would you like to get this before you go? And these campaigns are making a ton of money for people. So if you're running a retail business, you need a funnel, you need to run an ad campaign, and you need to have a strong online presence because I'm telling you right now, let's just imagine this. You own a brick and mortar store and you sell things through a storefront. What if you could make 3 times as much money as that store makes without having to pay for all the overheads of like the rental costs? That's what the potential of an online store is now. It could make 2 to 3 times as much revenue as a physical store because the amount of people that it can come in contact with is insane. So long as you run an effective ad. So I would suggest strongly anyone in brick and mortar needs to be really pushing their brand to get online, to get in front of people in their homes. And start relying on that as your primary focus as opposed to the retail. Because I'm telling you right now, in retail is going to exist in 10 years. It's going to be dramatically different to what it is now. But yeah, you need to get online.
And you know what's funny is like, I feel like 10 years ago, if you talked about, yeah, I want to own my own business, it was very much like the fantasy of owning a local tangible place, right? Like a brick and mortar place where you actually got to go in, open the door. There's clients, there's customers inside of that place. But now it's so much different, right? Like now online marketing has made a reality of working from anywhere with just your laptop, like a reality that can happen to a lot of people, you know? So dude, I think to close things off, I want to ask you about content creation because you are creating dope content every single day, right? Are you posting every day?
Yeah, pretty much.
Every day. So what is your content creation process like? And you know, like you can tell me as much as you can on that.
Yeah, man. So with my content, I try to, my audience drive my content. So my audience dictate what direction I go in. And basically I listen to my audience. Like I read the comments, I read the DMs. People like, hey, how does this work? Or hey, how do I do this? Or I always do Q&A as well on my students group as well as, and I get a lot of ideas basically from Q&A. I just listen to people. I listen to the audience. I try to identify a consistent problem that a lot of people have. And then I write it down in a little book here. I just keep it on my desk. I just write ideas down all day. If I get an idea, I'll just jot it down in my book. And then when time comes to sit down and create something, I'll hop onto like stock sites where there's images and I'll surf around for 20, 30 minutes, just trying to find an image that's kind of represents the idea that I want to talk about. So like, let's just say today's one, last night was a tough one last night. So I was like, I wanted to talk about engagement groups and how they're stupid and how they're just like, you're renting a crowd that's not real. And then if you stop paying for the subscription, they go away because they don't really care. So it's like, you're not building a real business. You're just building this fake persona. Whereas, and then the the bad tail end of that is if you run an engagement group, the algorithm knows you're doing it. It's so smart. Like the algorithm is intensely smart about this stuff because it hates bots. It hates the software stuff. And it will quietly in the back end, just drop down your organic reach, drop down your reach, drop down your growth because it doesn't trust you. And you're damaging the community because it doesn't want fake content. It doesn't want bad content that has high engagement that people don't care about. It wants good engagement that good content creates with a real audience that's authentic because that grows the platform. The other one damages it. So I was like, okay, this is my idea. So I would surf around and I was trying to find things that were kind of relevant to like quitting and giving up. I found an image of like a dude smashing a ball and chain with a hammer. I was like, this is kind of cool. And then I'll just go through and I'll kind of write it in my own words. Sometimes I'll use diagrams. Sometimes I'll just write. Last night, I think it was 3:30 in the morning. I just finished talking to Brandon Gross. He works for like Adobe and does some cool stuff. And we were just having the wildest chats. And I was like, oh my God, it's 3:30 in the morning, man. I got to go. I got to finish my piece of content. So then I would just sit there and I just try to teach something of value and keep it as simple and to the point as I can. I try to say as much with as few words that I possibly can. That's why in most cases I'll use illustrations. I'll use the image play to kind of put a feel or a theme to the thing that I'm talking about. And I just try to make it interesting and fun so that when people read it, they get value from it and they want to have a conversation with me. That's my intention. That's my process. Other people have different processes. That works for me. Other people do it different ways, you know, and you don't have to create carousels to get engagement. You just have to create something that's fun for people that they want to spend time looking at. And you just have to remember people have options. They could go watch Netflix. They could go out for a walk. They could go out and get some food. They could hang out with their friends. Why should they stop and engage with your content? What makes it so enticing that you deserve that? And if you're posting every day and it's not going anywhere, it probably means your content sucks. Sorry. It's something, it was a reality that I had to come to contend with, because I think that if you repeat something long enough, you'll figure out a way. If you make videos long enough, you'll stop sucking eventually. Maybe you suck for the first 30 videos, the second 30, you're okay. And the last 30, you're good. And then after that, you're killing it. You know, so like one of the most famous people on Facebook, when it comes to, you know, personal branding is Kerwin Ray. It took me 8 hours to make my first 3-minute video. I was so nervous. And he was like, it was like that for months. And then now he's like, I can just whip open my phone and make a video any time of the day and it goes viral. And he just had to be stubborn and just persist. I think you have to be stubborn when it comes to content creation. You have to be okay failing for a while. You have to be okay posting every day. Nothing's happening for a long time. Just keep persisting at it and then get feedback. You know, find people that are influential in your space and be like, hey, can you review my content and just tell me how much it sucks and tell me what I need to change? You know, so I was always doing this. I was always going to like Chris Doe and Michael Janda and Juju and like a few other people. I was like, hey man, I just made this post. I don't want to bug you. I know you're busy, but like, do you mind just kind of telling me what parts suck? And Christo was like, your typography sucks. That's all he said.
Really?
He's like, your typography sucks. And he's like, here's a video. He sent me a link to a video. And then I bought his course. And I was like, man, I don't know anything about typography. And then all of a sudden, within like a week, my engagement blew up because my typography was like way better and way cleaner and way more nice to look at. And I talked to some other people and like, try using different fonts. That font's hard to read. Or that color is a bit of an eyesore. Or that image it's not really a smart image to use. So I was always getting feedback. I was always seeking counsel, seeking guidance. And I think so many people don't do that. They just go, that's good enough. Why am I not getting engagement? It's like, no, like maybe you suck and maybe it's okay that you suck. Just find a way to get better. Yeah.
You know, what's crazy is that you reached out to these people that have done great things online and they actually replied to you. You know what I mean? Kind of like the same way that I just literally just hit you up on Instagram. I was like, yo, like, let's do a podcast. You're like, sure, dude, let's do it. You know what I mean? It was kind of like out of nowhere. And I was a little bit surprised, but at the same time, there has never been a time where reaching someone anywhere in the world it's never been this easy. You know what I mean?
No, it's so easy. That's such a good point. Yeah. I never thought of that. Yeah. Yeah, because like I guess I took it for granted. I'm like, yeah, I'll send him a message. He'll reply to me.
Yeah.
And if they didn't, I didn't care. Like I messaged Seth Godin like once a week.
Yeah.
I'm like, please talk to me, Seth. I love you. But you know, one of my friends got a podcast with him, so I'm like hitting her up. I'm like, can you put me in contact with Seth? I really want to talk to him. And now I'm organizing. I get to talk to my hero, so that's really cool. But yeah, I think it's crazy, man, because like they're just people and they're online. I've worked out a way I can get Gary Vee onto my podcast. I'm starting a podcast and I've lined up some insane guests and I can't believe, I lined up Gary Vee because I know three people in LA that like hang out with him whenever he's there. And they're like, yeah, man, we could get him on to do like a 20-minute thing. And I was like, my face just went white. I was like, get out of here, man.
That's so
but like, cool. Yeah, if you can't get in contact directly, try to find someone around that person that kind of hangs out with them or knows them. And if you dig around long enough, I've been trying to get in touch with Gary Vee for like a year. So this is awesome, man. But yeah, it's just, it's so easy, man, to reach out to these people and connect with them. And it's surprising how many of them reply. I messaged a guy yesterday, let me just get his name. I don't want to get his name wrong. I think it's Sean Atkins. He's dude, like this is a bit weird, but he's just got this wild story where, he was on the stock market and, killing it when he was Silicon Valley was blown up and yeah, Sean Atwood. Anyways, I watched a podcast and he's got like 500,000 subscribers on YouTube and I went onto his Instagram. He only had 10,000 people on Instagram and he posts every day. And I was like, oh my God, he might actually reply to me. And I sent him a message and he replied straight away. He's like, yeah, man, I'll do a podcast with you. Yeah. And he wild story. He's been on TV and stuff, but he was, he got rich in Silicon Valley and then he got rich selling ecstasy in like the 80s in London. And then he got locked up by the feds in Arizona, was in the prison system for like 5 or 6 years. And then in and out of gang violence and stuff. And then he's a funny guy. He's such a lovely guy. And then he gets out finally. And then now he writes books and he investigates people like Jeffrey Epstein and all that kind of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And he exposes the criminal syndicates within politics and stuff like that. And now he's like mega rich. And I was like, I wonder if I could get this guy on my podcast, man, just because I think he's interesting. Just send him a message. So yeah, if any of you guys out there that are trying to get in touch with people and you need advice in your niche, in your industry, you could probably find some people that can help you out.
Yeah.
And Gary Vee talks about this. Just make sure that you ask them in a really polite way. Just like, hey, this is my skill set. Is there anything I can do for you? By the way, I'd love to have you on my podcast or whatever. Like try to give them something. Yeah. And don't be like too needy and too demandy. Yeah. Usually if you approach them respectfully and you're not blunt and you're just kind of nice and you're polite and you talk to them, they'll talk back.
Yeah. And I guess we can't forget that we're all just humans. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, like, you know, whether you have 100K followers or a million followers, like we're all just people, man. You know what I mean? Like you don't have people, to be man. So afraid of talking to someone just because they've accomplished different things than you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's such a good point. I think that, if you just understand that we're all people, we're all trying to get ahead. And oftentimes these people like helping people. You know, usually they're in that position because they want to help. Mm. And, you know, unfortunately, Gary Vee is like mega busy. Like,
Dude, I can't. Yeah. You gotta, like, as soon as you hit that, you record that podcast, I wanna listen to that. That's dope, man. That's super.
I'll send it to you, man. Yeah, yeah. I'm freaking out. I didn't even know what I'm going to ask him, man. I just know he's my hero in many ways. And it's just going to be cool to meet him, you know.
Yeah. No,
awesome. I love it when he goes on a rant too. Like, that's kind of fun.
Yeah. Dude, that's awesome, man. Well, dude, you have given us way too much value. Like I'm hoping people right now are taking notes. I know I'm taking notes as I'm speaking with you because there's so much to learn from you. You have done a lot of great things. And more than anything, dude, I'm excited to follow your journey and see where you are in the next year, in the next 5 years with all the goals that you're talking about. So seriously, dude, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And before anything else, dude, like, please plug yourself in. Give us your Instagram handle, any other platforms that you want to share with other people.
Yeah, for sure. So right now, Instagram is probably where I'm most active. So if you just search Dane Walker, so D-A-I-N Walker, like Johnny Walker, you'll find my page. It's bright yellow. You can't miss it. But yeah, if you need help with social media and growing social media, if you just go to the link in my bio, I've got the academy. And I know, you know, Sebastian, you're in the academy. So we're putting a lot of tools in there. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to teach people how not just to grow social media, but how to build a brand, how to identify their audience, how to discover that audience and how to target them with content that they're going to enjoy, and just basically how to monetize and grow your Instagram to grow online social presence. There's a weekly call in there where you can jump in and talk to me and we can do a live Q&A. We can go back and forth. We can review your page and talk about some stuff. And then above that, I'm working on YouTube. So we're about to launch a YouTube platform in about 2 weeks. And it's just going to be free video content on there about different things. It's just going to be like my carousels, but in video format. I don't know if that's going to do any well, but it's just something I've wanted to do for a long time. And the last thing is I'm launching a podcast. So just keep an eye on my Instagram. I'll put it on there when it's launched. But that's going to be fun. But yeah, if you have any questions, send me a DM. I will reply. Sometimes it takes me 2 days. But if you have any questions for me, hit me up and I'll do what I can to send you resources or answer any questions that you guys might have.
Did you figure out the podcast name?
No, I'm still playing with names in my mind. Yeah. To be honest, we really haven't figured that out. But there's a lot of ideas floating around and we're not sure what's going to stick. But we just kind of wanted to get away from the norm of it all. Like, there seems to be that this normal type thing when it comes to podcasts. We wanted something that was a bit left field. And it's not particularly about design. It's just a really kind of high performance individual podcast. So I'm really going to be exploring a lot about what it takes to be a high performance individual. And we're going to be diving a lot into psychology and just some wild stories. I love stories. So we're just going to find people that have wild stories and that are doing crazy stuff.
Nice, man. I'm excited, yeah. Man.
Thanks, well, man.
Cool, man. Thank you so much again for being part of the podcast.
Dude, your podcast is awesome, man. Like, I had so much fun. Thanks for having me. Happy to come back anytime in the future, man. But thank you so much.
Awesome, brother. Thank you.
What up, what up? Thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. I really hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Remember to connect with me on social media at Sebas Garcia X for any questions, any comments. If you think you'd be a good fit for the podcast, let me know. But otherwise, you guys, I really appreciate you listening to the podcast. Like always, you know, if there's anything I can do to help you out, please, please let me know. Take care.